This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers
since 1947.
It's how my day begins.
It's how his day begins.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
We got some special Indian music there just for you.
I appreciate that.
At the Lane Agro Park, Justin Stefanski with us this morning. How are you this morning?
Doing great, Scott. It's good to be here with you.
So you got a lot coming up.
Yeah.
For one thing, folks can go out there and pick grapes.
Yeah, it's an awesome event we have coming up this Saturday. I don't know if a lot of folks know, but we have a vineyard on the property there at Lane Agri Park. And we have an annual grape harvest that is free and open to the public. And basically, you're doing us a favor by coming out and picking our grapes for us. So this Saturday from 8 to noon, again, this is, I'd probably err on the side of caution, get there closer to 8. You and your family can come out. You can be escorted out to our vineyard. We'll have a wagon ride for the tractor. And each family is welcome to come out and harvest grapes with us.
Are there a lot of people there usually?
Typically, yeah, there's several hundred people or more. I know in the last few years, I think they've been out of grapes by well before 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping this year we've limited how many grapes each family can take. You're still going to get to go home with a lot of grapes, but it'll be a lot of folks.
Now, there are some years that go by that it doesn't grow that many grapes.
Well, last year was the first year in the history of that vineyard we had a catastrophic crop failure. And if you think back to last August, it was miserably hot, miserably dry. The grapes went from being perfect, ready to pick, and within a week, every single grape had fallen off. And it was catastrophic.
Wow.
Truly, it was the saddest sight ever. That's the first time that's ever happened. So this year, the grapevines are absolutely loaded. I think they're going to be absolutely perfect come Saturday. And it's been a great year for us.
So what all do people do with the grapes they take home, but besides just eating them? Do some
right.
dry them for, you know, turn them into raisins? Or what are we looking at here?
Well, the grapes we grow are called Norton. And these grapes are not like your Concord or table grapes that you would get at Kroger or Publix. They do have small seeds in them. So these grapes work really well with juicing. You can juice them to make fresh grape juice. A lot of people will make jams and jellies out of them. I know our master gardeners have done that in the past. The jelly is phenomenal. These are a very sweet grape. They have a high sugar content. You can make wine out of them if you're willing to try that. But they are good. I eat them right off the vine. They do have little seeds, but it's kind of like a fig.
Yeah.
You ever eaten a fresh fig, those tiny little seeds, little grittiness, but nothing that you can't chew up and eat.
You know, I don't know anybody who has a fig tree anymore.
I see them a lot. Actually, believe it or not, they're kind of a closeted community, these fig growers. And, you know, they're hard to grow.
Finicky group of people.
Finicky group, man. I tell you what, that's... I think I'm about to cross that threshold and get a fig this year. I'm welcoming myself to that club. But there's a lot of people that'll have fig out there. They die back to the ground, though, here in the winter. You know, the last few years, our winter has been really cold. We've had those stretches of, you know, sub-20-degree temps for several days on end, and those fig trees will die back completely to the ground. But then they'll come right back the next spring.
You know, we used to have a lot of farms in this area that you could go out to, and they would invite families out to pick blueberries, to pick strawberries,
right.
Whatever the case is. Do we still have a lot of that in our area?
I wouldn't say a lot. They're few and far between. You know, I always, when people call me, you know, a lot of folks move here from other places in the country, and they are used to being able to grow fruit, whether it be from Michigan, Ohio, California.
Fruit growers, I didn't even think about fruit in Michigan.
Yeah,
growing.
Apples. I mean, it's just they have good soil and good climate for it. So when they move out to Tennessee, they say, I want to have an orchard or this, that, and the other. And I always tell them, I said, how many orchards do you see in Rutherford County?
Yeah.
And the answer is hardly any. And it's a very difficult spot to grow fruit here in Middle Tennessee. They don't like our soil. They don't like our climate. And the disease and insect pressure is really high.
But they don't move back to wherever they came from.
They stay here.
I've noticed that by the traffic count.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. On the way here this morning, I was headed up New Salem. I live in Rockville. And I don't ever go that way. And I could not believe it. It was unbelievable.
You know, I live like maybe 7-8 miles away from here, and it takes me, if I come in at 8 o'clock, it'll take me 30 minutes or longer to get here.
Yeah, I believe it. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I get here like 4. So
oh my gosh.
Absolutely nobody on the road.
that's awesome. I love those early morning drives, but I'm not a morning person, as you can tell.
I'm still asleep right now.
You and me both. I got my big giant Yeti full of coffee here. But yeah, I was thinking about that this morning. I'm like, man, if that fruit conversation would only dissuade them from coming. I feel like we should have that call before they decide to move here.
I see. I didn't know that myself. I had no idea. And I would have pictured places like Michigan, I would have pictured that being harder to grow stuff because of the cold climate that you have during the wintertime.
It would be counter to your thought process. I know I think the same thing sometimes, but they have really cold winter temperatures, which help control the disease and insect pressure.
Yeah.
Their soil is that glacial till, deep, rich soil. And a lot of our fruit trees need those cold hours through the winter to be more productive in the spring and in the summer. So they have less humidity. You know, we all know here there's humidity is through the roof.
Yeah.
When you have rain and humidity, you're going to have diseases. So they have a lot more conducive climate for growing, particularly apple trees.
You know, and I used to have thoughts about like Washington State and Alaska. Until you go there and see that there's greenery everywhere. Yeah. I mean, they've got one of the biggest, I think we talked about it before, one of the biggest rainforests in the world is in Alaska. But man, there's so much greenery there, more so than here.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable, isn't it?
It's
that
wild.
Temperate, deciduous, or the evergreen. To think that we have a rainforest here in North America is pretty crazy.
Yeah,
but it truly is.
Too. Yeah,
it's the last remaining rainforest, that Pacific Northwest area. I mean, it's a precious treasure.
And there's still gold growing up there.
That's
the other thing about Alaska.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
That would be it. I've never actually gone mining or anything like that gold, but it would be kind of interesting to do, you know, just at least go to one of the creeks or rivers there and just search for it.
I've seen it in the rivers here around Middle Tennessee.
Have you really?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, I spend a lot of time, you know, staring at the ground looking for arrowheads and creek walking, and I've absolutely seen, you know, there's pyrite, which is what we call fool's gold, but there, when you see real gold, you know it. Without a question of a doubt. And I mean, these are tiny, tiny little pieces.
Yeah.
It'd take you a lifetime to make a gold ring, you know, but it's out there.
Well, you know, in I think it's Murfreesboro, Arkansas, they've got a place where you can go and dig up diamonds. Yeah,
and these people find them.
Yeah,
I mean, huge, you know, multi-carat.
Oh yeah, there's been articles about know the magnificent massive diamonds found in Murfreesboro, Arkansas.
Right, it's pretty wild, isn't it?
I would like to go there too sometime.
It'd be pretty neat. And their rock type there is so different than ours. You know, they have so much more unique metamorphic type rocks. You know, we're blessed with limestone here.
We got a lot of it too.
A lot of it, you know,
which makes it a lot harder to build. And I've noticed in Rutherford County, the soil is a lot different than compared to, let's say, Williamson County.
It is. You know, Williamson County is fortunate. They've got a lot of river bottom land. You know, we got the Harpeth River in Williamson County and other water bodies where we have the stones here, but our river bottom land is not as you know, prevalent as it would be in Williamson. And we have a lot of flat areas, and those flat areas, just over millions of years, you know, that soil that was there, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's not there anymore. So it's a challenge here to build and to grow anything in a lot of places in this county.
It really is interesting, though, how unique the differences can be from one county to another, one city to another, because you can really see big changes just by driving 5 minutes away.
And you think about West Tennessee, you know, row crop country. I mean, they've got that Mississippian alluvial floodplain. You know, up until several million years ago, there was still an inland waterway there that connected to the Gulf of Mexico. So it's pretty incredible to think about the way our state is geographically, where it stretches across so many hundreds of miles.
Yeah.
We've got rocks in the Appalachian mountain chains that are 2+ billion years old, all the way to the Mississippian floodplain there that is, you know, just some of those areas are only several thousand years old.
You know, I think Tennessee is one of the widest states out
it
there. I mean, there's Texas, of course, but that's just massive all the way around. But yeah, it is such a wide state. And like you're saying, because of that, we do see major geographical changes and rock formation change, all of it.
One of my favorite words is physiographic region.
I don't even know what that means.
I know. It's a pretty crazy word. Physiographic, it basically is the physical geology of the area that you live in. So we have our state broken down into physiographic regions. Hmm. And, you know, we're in the Central Basin.
Yeah.
And as the name would imply, the basin, you know, we sit in the low spot of the state. And you know what's interesting to me is this used to be the high point. You know, so over hundreds of millions of years, you know, this used to be a dome. They called it the Nashville Dome. And it eroded away down to what we have left, which is hard clay and limestone.
Yeah.
So people always come into the office and they're like, I found a dinosaur fossil. And I say, where'd you find it? Oh, in my backyard. And I say, no, there's no dinosaur fossils here. There could have been at one time, but they are washed out into the Gulf. So what we have left here, you know, that limestone is the ancient seafloor of the Ordovician. It's 460 million years old.
Now, what is interesting are all the caves that we have.
Oh, it's unreal.
In Rutherford County.
Oh, it's unbelievable. People don't even realize. And, you know, we have, I think it's called Black Cat Cave up there toward the landfill.
The VA, is that the one? Yeah.
And they found remains in there, human remains, Native American. You know, there's this misnomer that Native Americans didn't really live here in Rutherford County.
Oh.
They said this was kind of a hunting ground, but there was no permanent inhabitation. And that cave really proved that wrong.
Yeah.
They showed that people were living here. And I have to believe they were. As many artifacts and things as I've seen out in this county, they had to have been living here at some point.
Well, that whole area of Walter Hill, I mean, there were Indians out there who lived there, I don't know how many hundreds of years ago, but that was no, I mean, that's a big area.
And we think about Old Jefferson. You know, that was the first state capital, I believe.
Yeah.
Or maybe not the state capital, but Old Jefferson was the county seat.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that's right along Percy Priest where it was flooded. And there's early accounts of there being Native Americans here. So,
well, the Trail of Tears went through,
right through
Old
there.
Jefferson.
Absolutely.
And I wonder if when, you know, that walk or whatever you want to call it took place. I mean, was the town of Old Jefferson already established? Was there a town there back then?
I think there was. And I think that it was, you know, it was never a big community
mm-hmm.
at any point in time. You know, it may have been a couple hundred people at the most. So I think it was still there. But it really, once Murfreesboro became the county seat, I think Old Jefferson became an afterthought. And of course, when they came in and, you know, TVA flooded that part of the Stones River and then the Percy Priest formed, I think it just totally cease to exist.
You know, I was listening to something that State Representative Mike Sparks talking about when they made, of course he lives in Smyrna, but when they made Percy Priest Lake, something that they did not account for was the number of caves that were in that area as they started flooding that whole area. And therefore, their dimensions of what they measured the lake to be weren't as large as what they had expected because of all these caves that filled with water.
Water just went right into them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Swiss cheese under our feet.
It is.
They call it the karst topography, and I don't think people realize that you probably can stand anywhere in Rutherford County and somewhere beneath your feet is a cave system. And most of them will never be found or explored. You know, they're just not accessible. But it is absolutely incredible. Where I'm at in Rockvale, there are caves everywhere. I've got the beginning of a cave forming in my backfield right now.
That's kind of scary. Sounds
it
like a sinkhole.
It is, man. It started out as the size of a softball 8 years ago, and now you absolutely could fall in that thing.
Wow.
And it goes down to a point where I can't see it anymore because there's kind of rock shelves here and rock shelves there. So I have no idea how far down it goes, but I feel like that is a future research project that I shall endeavor to find out in the future.
Yeah. You know, I've been in quite a few of the caves that are here in Rutherford County. I've got a friend who he plats out, I guess, does map work or something with the state of the underground water systems that are flowing through these caves and how they go from one county to the other. And there are underground streams that go from neighboring counties into Rutherford County and past the county.
It's pretty incredible, isn't it?
It's pretty awesome.
If anybody of you have been up to Cedars of Lebanon State Park, there behind the Nature Center is called Jackson Cave. And they say that that thing is a river system that flows for miles and miles and miles. And to think about an underground river.
Yeah.
And we think about the fish and the amphibians that live in those caves. Totally unique species. They're white. They have no skin color. They have no eyes. I mean, they've just been in those caves for so many millions of years that they can only live there and there alone. You know, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and of course, it's scary to think about being in those caves when it starts raining. And
oh, gosh.
It could be raining a county over, and you don't realize that there's a water system connected to this cave. You know, that
it's like being in one of those slot canyons in Arizona.
Yeah,
I mean, it just fills with water so quick, and it's violent. Turbulent.
I would like to do more exploring of some of the cave systems we have because, like you were saying, there are some that are unexplored. People may not even realize they are there.
Right.
But so many of them in Rockvale, that Rockvale area is fascinating. In fact, I think there's a place where you can go in Rockvale. They do tours of a cave too.
I think you're right, and I can't remember exactly where it is, but man, there's some big ones over there.
There are stalactites, stalagmites. I mean, they're all
that's pretty crazy.
Just like what we see in Mammoth Cave. They have it here in Rutherford County.
And I think Tennessee has more caves than Kentucky, if I remember correctly.
Really?
I think we have the most cave miles per state of any state in the nation. So.
Now, isn't it a federal law, no matter where you find the stalactite, if you find one, if you touch it, if you break it, if you steal it, cut it, whatever, you face federal charges.
I feel like there's some law on the books about that.
I think, because I was reading something one time about it, and I remember it saying, I mean, it's like prison time there if you get caught with it, and Yeah, there's some big deals there.
I remember when MTSU science department moved buildings, there was a box of rocks that I inherited, right? Oh, I don't know how I got it. I can't remember. They said, we're having a bunch of stuff. Come pick it up on this date. And you know what was in that box?
Uh-oh.
I couldn't tell if it was a stalactite or a stalagmite. By golly, it was in there. It was about a 2-foot-long section. And I thought, well, it's in the box, and they're giving it away. So, I mean, feds will probably be at my door by the time I get home. But
that's right. You've got felonies waiting for you right there.
Oh,
but, yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, they form over, what, thousands of years?
Thousands of years,
and,
yeah.
And some of them are pretty remarkable looking, especially when you shine light on them.
Oh,
they're
man,
almost
it's unreal.
Crystal-like. Yeah.
Yeah. Just think about that slow trickle of water, and I guess it's the calcium carbonate in there that forms it.
You know, and there's places along, if anybody goes kayaking or canoeing down the Stones River, there are some little small cave openings and stuff along the river. And there's one of them, I think it's near River Bend Subdivision, and you can look inside and you can actually see there's a stalactite in there.
Oh my gosh, really?
It's pretty cool.
That's amazing.
And it's amazing it survived for as many years with flooding, you know, happens all the time on Stones River.
Flooding and teenage boys between the two. I mean, that's a miracle.
It is. I wish we had something that was a little deeper as far as the river goes.
Right.
Like the Duck River, Buffalo River. That's one of the better ones to go down. But Stones River's tough to go down.
I mean, you've got areas of rap, you know,
rapidity, a lot of walking,
your kayak will not stay very unscraped for very long if you're kayaking the Stones.
Yeah.
You know, and it really is one of those things where you got to hit it at the right time of year. And then, I mean, you've probably seen it too along the Greenway. When we have a flood event, the amount of debris that are, it's up in the trees.
It is.
It's a very violent event. But most of the year, though, yeah, there's, if you hit a pocket of 5-6 feet, that's about the deepest you're going to see here in the Stones.
Very true. Now, I guess once you get Smyrna or past Smyrna, right, going towards Percy Priest Lake itself, that's where it gets a little deeper.
You'll have some deep pockets.
Man, there's so many just trees that are in the water.
Rocks, yeah. You know, it's great for fishing.
It is. It's just not good for your boat or your propeller. You know?
Right, absolutely.
There's been so many incidents I've heard about out there that have cost people thousands of dollars. And it happens every year, especially with new people moving into the area who
they
are not used to the lake. Yeah,
bless their hearts.
Yeah, it's one of those things. So anyway, Saturday coming up 8 o'clock this morning, and you said arrive early. So should people start getting there at about 7:45?
You know, it can't hurt anything. It really can't hurt anything. Now, we'll officially open at 8, but like I said, it's first come, first serve. And I know in the years past, we've been blessed to be picked out by 10 o'clock. So I'm hoping this year, since, you know, in the past, we have juiced the grapes in collaboration with MTSU.
Like right there?
Yeah, right on site. They had a press and a juicer. So we've decided not to do that in hopes that it will make our harvest go farther. It takes a lot more grapes to make a gallon of juice than it would to just pick them fresh.
Yeah.
So
now and by the way, this is all at Lane Agri Park, John R. Rice Boulevard.
When you come in, I should specify, you're going to be going to where our farmer's market building is.
Okay.
And where the demonstration area is, there'll be a pavilion there. It'll be directly in front of the farmer's market. There's the barn, which is the big first building you see, and then the community center is the one where the farmer's market is. If you look directly across the little road there, that's where our pavilion is, and that's where our check-in station will be.
So is this kind of like kids lining up for an Easter egg hunt? You have a big ribbon that you cut and all right, you can go now,
and they all run. It's like Black Friday. Yeah. You know, yeah, hopefully it'll be a little more organized than that.
But as you show up, I guess what, you check in first?
Check in at the registration pavilion, and then we'll be giving out tickets, and we'll be giving out your bag to harvest the grapes. And then again, you can either walk out to the vineyard. I'd say it's about 1,000 yards, or we will have a tractor with a hay ride that you can ride out there as well.
Okay. And then for anybody out there who makes wine or plans to maybe try making wine, how do you go about doing that with these grapes? I mean, you first of all, I guess you juice them, you crush them.
Right. Crush them, juice them, and then basically, you know, they sell these homemade winemaking kits, or you can try to do it from scratch, and you're just adding sugar and yeast, I believe, and that is the fermentation process. But yeah, you would juice them just like any other, you know, grape juice that you start with for winemaking. And again, it is a sweet, you know, I think that the wine that you make would be like a dessert wine almost. It would be a really, really sweet table wine.
So then you let it just sit for, what, a year? I mean,
I don't think
that
it's that long, actually. I don't think it's that long. But I've made wine one time when I was in college with a friend of mine.
And are you talking like prison wine here?
Or yeah, what was I don't it like? Think it really turned out the way it was supposed to be. It tasted more like moonshine to me than it did wine. So we did something wrong. So my winemaking experience is minimal and it's not accurate.
Did you measure the alcohol content? I mean, because they've got, I guess, kits or something where you can measure alcohol content. And I'm curious, what would it be with most homemade wines?
Oh, it's somewhere in the... probably 15 to 25%, if I had to guess.
Maybe. So fairly high then.
Fairly high, I believe. Ours had to have been in the 30s or 40s.
Yeah,
it was. You know, I think the kid 1,000%. Said, you know, it said leave it for X amount of time, and we said, well, if we leave it for this long, it'll be this alcoholic. If we leave it for twice as long, it should be more. And I think that was our thought process. And it, I can attest, it was more in terms of the alcohol content.
But I guess it's a matter of figuring out the right ingredients to have the right taste. That's the hard part.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something. It's such a skill and an art form. It's unbelievable the science that goes into it. It really is way above my pay grade.
Hey, have you been surprised to see the number of wineries that we have here? I mean, because I remember not too long ago, some of these places were. Vineyards are sitting there. Used to be tobacco growing.
Absolutely. It is pretty impressive to me, and I think it is a reflection of the amount of California transplants that we've had move here. I think a lot of the wineries that I see, it's folks from the West Coast.
Yeah,
but they realize, you know, Tennessee is you don't associate grape growing in Tennessee with you know what we're used to, but the variety that we grow is Norton, and it is perfectly suited for the Southeast, and particularly for our Tennessee heavy clay soil. So you know, growing these varieties that do well here, I think has transformed that ability for growers to grow grapes here. You know, because our, you know, typical wine grapes, your Concords and things like that, they struggle here.
Yeah.
They're just not adapted for our climate, especially our soil. You know, it's the soil is really everything. But these Norton grapes they're kind of a native type variety, and they do really good here.
Now, I know one of the most beautiful wineries that we have and vineyards is that Arrington Vineyards. Yeah. And of course, there again, the soil that's Williamson County, and there is a difference there. Right. In fact, starting at Eagleville, it seems like the soil starts to change.
It really does. You can just tell it in the fields; they're greener, they're more lush. And you know, Williamson County or Arrington has really nice slope sites.
Yeah,
you know, they've got good drainage there. And if you've ever been out and seen a real vineyard, I mean, you know, they're on kind of a hillside, a slope, and that helps the air move through the vineyard. And you know, you think that cold air will always settle in the bottom. So when you have a slight slope site, you know, in the wintertime or in the late spring when we get those freezes, that cold air will settle, and the grapes, as they're growing up the slope, will not be as exposed to those conditions.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, though, to see, I guess, the variety of vineyards that we do have. I mean, as you drive around the state.
We have a wine trail now.
Tennessee Wine Trail. Oh, we do. And people start from point A and they go through the whole state?
Just like the Bourbon Trail, we have a wine trail. I know that PicTN Products with TDA, they've established some of these things, and it's really become a pretty hot thing this time, you know.
Huh. So where does that start? I mean, do they start like Memphis and go all the way up towards East Tennessee? What?
I think there's several different ones per region. I guess in theory, you could start from one end of the state to the other. I don't really encourage that. That'd be a lot of wine to consume.
A lot of driving,
A lot
too,
of driving, yeah. Which really don't jive too well. But yeah, I think they're set up by regional localities.
Okay. And then here in the Middle Tennessee area, I mean, it does seem like we have everything from vineyards to strawberry fields to, you know, blueberry growers. Right. I mean, there is a pretty big variety here.
Absolutely. You know, so a lot of these things are tucked away, and unfortunately, a lot of them are not here in Rutherford County. But if you get into some of these surrounding counties, you think about Sumner County, Portland. That's the strawberry. You know, that's the Plant City, Florida of Middle Tennessee.
And
everybody's
got
familiar with Plant City.
What, the strawberry? They have the strawberry, what is that called every year?
Strawberry Festival or something? I don't.
But remember. Yeah, that's in Portland, right?
It is, absolutely. So, and there are areas, and I was an agent in Wilson County for 6 years. And there are quite a few orchards and pick-your-own operations there. So it is pretty unique.
And Wilson County, it's not too far from Portland, I guess. Is that, what is that, 109 you go down to get to Portland?
Yes, 109, and then you can either go 231 North or 109.
And then you keep going a little further, you'll end up in Kentucky at a casino or something.
Something. It's a different land up there in Kentucky.
But it is cool, though, to see how from city to city, county to county, how things change and how different landscapes are.
And you think about, you know, they've got the Cumberland River and those areas up there along that Cumberland River, man, you talk about rich, deep soil. You know, it's there's a farm that's directly across the county line when you get into Trousdale County, Kelly's Berry Farm, and they grow right along the river. And it's just the perfect spot to grow small fruits like that. So unfortunately, we don't have those perfect areas here. But as you get out, you know, within an hour, hour and a half of here, there's lots of fruit growing operations.
Now, I wonder, I don't know what year that they put the dam up there on, you know, to make Old Hickory Lake, which is part of Cumberland River. But I wonder what that land was like before they flooded that area.
I'd have to say that was some of the most rich, productive farmland around. You know, you think even along the Cumberland before they flooded it, any of those areas there, you've got millions of years of sediment and silt that's just been deposited along that riverway. And it is just, I mean, you could dig a hole there and go down 20, 30 feet and not hit a pebble.
Wow.
And it's rich. It looks different.
Yeah.
It's light. It's loamy. It's just such a different texture. So, yeah, I bet there was a lot of good farmland that was underwater.
So when you're looking for, let's say, land to build a house on or something, there's not a lot of it out there, but for those looking for something like that, what are they looking for? If there's somebody who wants to have a vegetable garden of some sort in their yard, I mean, do they look for darker colors or lighter colors of dirt? What are they looking for?
So, you know, the darker the color of the soil, that means there's a more organic content in it. So that's decomposed leaf litter, sticks and twigs. I mean, ideally, that's what you want. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of that here in Rutherford County. But if you did want to grow in ground, now clay is the predominant soil type. And of course, it is lighter in color, oranges to red. There's a misnomer that clay is not nutritious. That's not necessarily true. It's just the structure of it doesn't drain as well. Either holds too much water or doesn't hold any at all. It depends on the time of year. You know, raised bed gardening has become a huge thing. I'm a huge proponent of it. There where I live in Rockvale, that's the only way to do it. But you know, if you have, let's say, 10 to 12 inches of soil, you can have a garden.
And the clay stuff, you know, it tracks all over your house.
Oh gosh,
I mean, depending on what time of year it is, if you have kids especially, man, you can ruin a house
There's
quickly.
No hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, we always make the joke, you know, soil is what you grow plants in, dirt is what you track in on your shoes.
It is, yeah. Right. It's like sticky.
And God forbid you get it on a pair of khaki pants.
Forget they're ruined it. Forever.
I have work khakis and I have clothes that I wear out to the field one time, and then it just looks like I've rolled around in the mud like a dog. You know, that's it.
We're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back. We're talking again with Justin Stefanski with the Lane Agri Park, the Agriculture Extension Service here in Rutherford County. And if you have any questions, you can text those in at 615-893-1450.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's restaurant. Demas's has had a bar when we opened 35 years ago, and we've done the exact same thing with our bar menu that we've done with our food menu. We get higher quality items, higher quality cocktails. Again, some people just want a drink with their meal, where they might be able to get a drink to complement their meals. You need to check it out, so come on over right now. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street. We really focus on value.
Murfreesboro, this is Amanda from Animal City. We're at 919 Northwest Broad Street. This is the time of year where we have lots of amazing adoptable cats and kittens. So if there is a furry feline companion in your future, come in and see us. We are so proud to be Murfreesboro's pet destination for 35 years. Animal City, we have lots of amazing adoptable cats and kittens. Animal City, 919 Northwest Broad Street. Family owned and operated.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
With us this morning, Justin Stefanski from the Lane Agri Park, the Agriculture Extension Service. And I've heard it called so many things, the UTTSU. I mean, what is the official title?
The official name is the UTTSU Rutherford County Extension Office.
Okay.
You know, we have a partnership between the University of Tennessee and Tennessee State University, and we're, you know, they used to call us Ag Extension.
Yeah.
I think they dropped that, you know, the Extension Service name a while ago, so we're just called Extension now.
Anybody out there listening who may be from another state where they're not familiar with these offices, people can bring in soil samples, yep. They can bring in spiders. I mean,
like, yeah, absolutely. They can bring in anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you've got a plant problem, if you've got an insect problem, if you want to get your soil tested, you know, this is the place to come, you know, 315 John R. Rice Boulevard. And, you know, we're fortunate in Tennessee. We still have a county office in every single county. And UT and our state legislators are committed to that. So we're very blessed in that regard.
You know, one thing that I think those who are from, let's say more so the West Coast than anywhere else, they don't really experience things like ticks there like we do here.
Right.
And ticks may be totally unfamiliar to some of them, and it can be scary how quickly you can get ticks the minute you walk outside during
Absolutely.
Certain times of the year.
You know, it's gotten so bad that we have some people now that are focusing specifically on tick-related issues.
Yeah.
I was at a training about a month ago, and we had two specialists come in to talk about, you know, tick-borne illnesses and things that they spread, not only to livestock, but to humans as well. And we seem to be getting more ticks that are coming in from warmer areas to the south and to the west of us. You know, just like the armadillos that we had, you know, as our temperature changes a little bit. So, yeah, you know, Lyme disease is a huge thing. You know, it's become so prevalent now.
And from what I understand, there's not an exact cure for Lyme disease, right?
It's like a chronic condition. You just have to suffer through it for the rest of your life, unfortunately.
And it sounds pretty bad for those who have it.
Absolutely. You know, it is not a fun thing. It's debilitating for a lot of folks. You know, and it, you know, ticks are out there. And I always tell people when they're out in tall grass or they're out in brush, you know, put some bug spray on, you know, get some, you know, deep woods off and coat your, you know, especially around your legs. And if you're wearing shoes, it's never a bad idea to tuck them into your high top shoes. If you have to be out in the tall grass, take those precautions.
The other one is alpha-gal.
Yeah, alpha-gal is the other one. I think that's the one that you can't eat red meat.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's, you know, I've got it.
Really?
Raise my hand. Hey, guys, I've got it. Yeah. For me, I guess I got the tick when I was about 17 or so, because the full-on allergic reactions to stuff like beef didn't really start really happening in the way they do today if I were to eat it until I was about 17 or so.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But yeah, you can't eat basically any mammals.
Oh,
so that's
gosh.
Pork as well. And I think for some people who do have alpha-gal, some of them can tolerate pork
right.
without a problem. But then you have others, like me, I can't eat any.
Oh, my
you
goodness know? Gracious.
It's wild, because it didn't start off that way. At first, it was just beef.
Right.
You know, and it would show even on an allergy test. Beef was the only thing I was...
Wow.
But then it slowly turned into, well, now it's everything, every mammal. Yes. So I can eat poultry all I want
right.
to, and seafood and stuff like that.
No more hamburgers.
No hamburgers.
No more ribeyes.
I have not had beef. I haven't had steak or anything like that since I was about 18
gosh.
Years old. Yeah.
I feel like I should shake your hand or give you a hug. I don't know which.
Yeah, but at the same time, I look at it and that's got to equal better health in some ways. I mean, if you factor in, because man, otherwise right. I would be having steak. I love steak.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I was 16 and I could still eat it. You know, it's good.
It's hard to beat a ribeye.
Yeah.
And a cheeseburger is just one
or
of those.
Bacon.
Oh man. Don't even get me started.
True
yeah.
Southern foods, right?
I still eat them in large quantities, you know,
yeah,
so
yeah.
You're probably much healthier than me.
But yeah, I mean, those are things that can really happen from
Absolutely.
A tick bite.
And you don't know what's happened. You know,
no.
A lot of times you don't even know you've been bit by a tick, you know?
Yeah.
And they show up in places you don't want them.
Yeah.
Ticks are terrible.
Yeah.
I hate them.
You know, in my case, I don't know at what point I had the tick, you
right.
know, I got it. And then all of a sudden I'm allergic to beef. But yeah, it gets so bad to where those reactions can equal your throat closing up.
Oh my
goodness. In addition, of course, to hives and all that stuff.
Right.
But yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, we got to be aware of these things.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you're a case study right there. I mean,
well, thank
it's out
you.
There.
Yeah. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Real science right here in front of me.
But yeah, that is a good reminder, though, to take precautions
to
avoid it, because you don't want it, you know.
When I go on site visits, you know, I have to walk through tall grass and I'm down there just coating my legs in deep woods off, and usually my clients are like, really, you're doing that? I'm like, yes, I am, and I recommend you do too. You know, they're always really surprised by the precautions I take. We're supposed to report ticks when we get bit in the field.
Really?
That's how bad it's gotten.
Man,
you know, we're really supposed to report those incidences just for the health consequences.
That's wild. I don't think people from other areas, unless you're from somewhere in the South, I don't think they fully understand how bad ticks really can be.
I always think about, you know, Native American populations, or I think about deer in the woods.
But did they have those problems? Was Lyme disease around back then? I mean,
there had to have been some tick-borne illnesses related to that, but they probably had some natural, you know, resistance against them. People with European ancestry, we have none,
yeah,
unfortunately. But, you know, you think about a deer out in the woods, and I know hunters that process deer, and they say you would not believe the amount of ticks that are on a deer when you process it. I mean, you feel for them.
Yeah, I believe it, yeah.
There's nothing they can do about it.
No, and I guess way back, you know, like let's say the 1700s or so, you didn't have to worry as much about insects and even animals going from state to state as much as you do these days. Right. Because these days, well, first of all, there's so much construction, it drives animals
absolutely
elsewhere. But then on top of that, there wasn't as much travel by vehicle, train, or right, who knows what.
We transport a lot of bad things, yeah, via shipping routes. You know, we found a new bug here in Tennessee a couple years ago, the spotted lanternfly, and this has become a huge pest in the Northeast and Midwest. Huh. You know, it affects fruit crops in particular, affects certain tree species, and they found it in South Nashville along that gigantic rail depot area.
Ah.
And they have to assume that it came in on a shipping cargo crate of some kind. And, you know, it's been spotted in Davidson County now.
It's wild what comes from other countries. I mean,
it's unbelievable. We think about the emerald ash borer,
yeah,
which is the bug from Southeast Asia that is decimating our ash trees. And it came in on a shipping crate, you know, and it was spotted, I think, first in the Midwest and Northeast. And, you know, it's spread over the entire eastern half of the United States now.
And in those other countries, whatever bug it is that they bring over here, it may not cause as big of an issue there.
It's got natural biological controls. You know, those plants and animals have evolved with these insects, so they're naturally less susceptible to devastating effects of them. Versus here, our trees have no natural resistance, and there's no predatory bugs that even know that an emerald ash borer is a thing, you know, so there's no checks and balances.
It makes me wonder, are insects from the U.S., are they getting into other countries and causing problems?
Absolutely. And even animals. You think about raccoons.
Yeah.
Raccoons have become a huge issue in, you know, Central Europe, places like Germany and places like France. You know, we export things that Colombian exchange is still happening to this day.
See, I didn't know. So raccoons are actually popping on ships.
Raccoons, and, you know, and I think they were brought there as pets, you know, as a novelty.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, they're going to escape somebody's backyard. They're raccoons, you know. And that was all it took.
That's scary. And, you know, what's interesting when you look at the shipping routes and how, like the Panama Canal, for instance, what a fascinating journey that would be. Maybe not for the raccoons and the insects, but it is interesting how much history is there and how much history the oceans have themselves.
It's unbelievable. I think about it all the time, and it's like, you know, we just don't really think about that. When you buy something at Hobby Lobby, you have no idea the journey that it's taken.
No.
Thousands of miles, and it went through the Panama Canal, and the fact that the Panama Canal is a thing is just mind-blowing still to this day.
Because when they built that, I don't know how many thousands died building it.
Malaria, but, and accidents, and, you know, it's just unbelievable.
And it's so wide, or not wide, it's very narrow, but as far as the land, how long it is,
right?
I forgot how many, what is it, hundreds of miles?
I feel like it's at least 100 miles,
But it's massive.
It is, it's huge. And to think that those ships used to have to go all the way around the coast of South America, I mean, it's just unbelievable to me.
It's pretty cool. Now, one thing I am curious about, there, for example, Costa Rica, you've got monkeys everywhere.
Yeah.
Why have they not gotten into America? I don't hear stories about just, you know, random monkeys.
I think it's climate, and I think it's the food source. You know, they are feeding on tropical vegetative fruits and high sugar fruits, and they're feeding on insects, so they're omnivores. But I think it's really climate. They do not like cold weather. They need that tropical type setting, warm conditions. They just do not have the makeup to endure either extremely hot, dry type weather or cold, temperate weather.
Very cool to watch them, though.
Oh, they're fascinating, isn't it? To think that we still have monkeys.
I know.
In this hemisphere is just crazy.
And if you've ever been to Costa Rica, you look up, you know, and there'll be like 30 of them just standing there staring at you, waiting for you to drop food.
They're pesky, too.
Yeah.
They have evolved alongside humans, you know. They know where the food is, and they're going to find it.
They're
like seagulls at the beach.
They really are. it is interesting. And I don't know. I've never really seen monkeys in Mexico or heard a lot about monkeys in Mexico, but surely they're there too, because you've got Costa Rica, then you've got
that Yucatan Peninsula.
Yeah, some monkeys in Nicaragua, I guess. But they've got to get up to Mexico.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. They're there, and it's just wild to think about. You know, I read a report a couple years ago about backyard birds, even in North America, and they said that the beak shapes and sizes have slowly changed over the last several hundred years to adapt to bird feeders.
Really?
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So already, you know, we're seeing these animals that are slowly adapting. Not to change the topic from monkeys, which is really fascinating, it just shows the impact that humans are having on the plants and animals around us, and the fact that they've even observed it in the last, you know, observable time frame, 100 years or so, that beak shapes and sizes have changed to adapt to modern bird feeders. It's pretty incredible.
It is. I never heard that before. It makes you wonder, have the snouts of dogs changed a little bit with dog bulls?
It's probably very likely. Have you ever seen those photos of like a bulldog from 1900 to today? They don't even look remotely the same.
I'm going to have to look this up.
It's crazy. You know, there are some dog breeds that you look at pictures 100 years ago and they are not even closely alike anymore, because we have bred specifically for this facial feature, for that body structure, for that length, and a lot of these dog varieties and species look totally different now.
It's kind of scary.
It is.
When you look at it, and when you look at pictures from like the early 1900s as an example, people are smaller compared to today.
You know, I'm still small, so I'm still living in the 1900s.
Yeah, you're
apparently
in the 1900s. But no, you can see real differences.
Yeah. The health effects of our diet.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't eating the same level of food that we were, the quality of the nutrition. And the same can be said now with obesity rates.
Yeah.
You look at, like, you know, when people are eating fresh fruits and vegetables. You know, you look at a yearbook from the 1960s, there were very few portly children.
Isn't that weird?
It is weird.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, gosh, stuff has just really changed. And I think, of course, the world of cell phones plays a big role in all that.
Oh, man, they're the worst. I hate them.
That and video games, you know. They keep kids inside more so than anything else.
You drive through a neighborhood now and you don't even see kids outside. What? It's sad.
Kids don't exist. They're extinct.
Yeah.
But then you have adults who are stuck. They play video games 24/7.
Oh, it's crazy, isn't it?
It just keeps you indoors, though. All right, that's all we have time for. I didn't realize it's already 9 o'clock.
Great chat.
So again, Saturday free grape picking, and that is going to be Lane Agri Park, 8 to noon.
Come on out and see us.